Thank you very much, Carl. And thank you for this opportunity to share my story with you today. I just learned a little bit about Huddle, and I think it's a fantastic. You all should be very proud to have this opportunity to come together as men and have a Bible study like this and share and learn. And I hope I can shed a little light from my story, speaking into your lives, from my life. It's my objective to serve you in every way I can. And I have just a little prayer that I always give before I speak. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be perfect and pleasing to you. This is my story. If there was any one word that I think that I would lead off with, as I'm going to be brutally transparent, it's something that's become a hallmark of my when I speak, and that I think that transparency is something that's missing today and in our society, and that we're not as open in sharing the raw experiences that we have with each other, particularly men, so that we can learn from each other. So I'm going to be very transparent. I hope that it serves somebody at different points along the way. I'm 59 years old. I was born in 1957. I grew up in Carmel, Indiana, and I graduated from Carmel High School in 1976. I'm the oldest of three, and I have two younger sisters. My father, in 1967, started his home building company when I was 10, and I had the great pleasure, which many young people today don't have, of growing up and watching my father work and watching him actually deal with the starting of a company and all the trials and tribulations and celebrations that come with that. Our children today don't get that opportunity. And so it's become a part of my bedrock to understand what that's like, and I'm very grateful for that. At the same time, and this is a story that my father heard before he passed away, so I'm not speaking out of his awareness, but my father was extremely abusive when I was a young boy. He was very personally humiliating, verbally, physically. I endured many whippings, beatings, and constant, they were constant throughout my entire childhood. And it had a profound impact on my psyche. And growing up in my teens, it continued. I felt as though he hated me. I felt as though I was always disappointing him. And I was actually very scared of him well into my adulthood. Yet I had always had good grades. I was an accomplished athlete. I worked hard, held jobs from the youngest of age, working at the family grocery store that my uncles and grandfather had, and didn't really quite understand why I was receiving this. In addition to that, I endured considerable sexual abuse. I had a principal who decided that I was going to be a target of his sexual fantasies, and a couple teachers also who played out their fantasies on me. And then some older grown boys decided that they would also do the same thing. And I was very confused by this, because I was not a weak, effeminate boy in any regards. I didn't know why I was involved or engaged in this, and yet at the same time, to be very honest, I engaged in this activity in my teens because I had become a teenager, and I had learned through counseling that when young boys are growing up, if they have any kind of a dysfunction in their bonding with their own sex when they're growing up, When they enter their teens, this becomes a sexualized desire. And so this was something that started to develop inside of me. I had tremendous shame, self-hatred, addiction to it, and I was living a double life. These things don't happen just to weak people, slightly built people, effeminate boys. I was very strong. I was very fast. I was involved in all sports. I was all state. I went to college on a football scholarship. I was president of my class and president of my fraternity. Athletics actually saved my life because they gave me the affirmation that I wasn't receiving in other aspects. And I compensated for it. What athletics did is allowed me to compensate for the depression that I was experiencing because of the double life and the emotions and the confused feelings that I was having, and the suicidal thoughts. Yes, the suicidal thoughts. Suicide among teens today is something that deeply, deeply concerns me. And having been one that was able to be a survivor of those very frequent thoughts and emotions, it's something I think we need to be concerned about, be more aware of, and realize is more prevalent than we realize. I was also, in compensating for this, I was also very active sexually with girls, which I also, because of my overactivity, was not, I didn't find that fulfilling because I wasn't doing it for the right reasons. And I soon got married after college. And that marriage failed very quickly. And she became depressed and went into treatment, and I thought it was all because of me. In some way, shape, or form, I was not a real man, a man that was appropriate for marriage, and caused me considerable emotional distress. And I went to a counselor, and the counselor said, you just need to accept your orientation, and you need to just go out and start living it out and realize who you are. And so I did for a little while, only to realize that that really wasn't who I was, and I didn't find it fulfilling, and I didn't find it who I was. And while there were certain aspects of the sexual confusion I had, that was not who I was meant to be. I found moral conflict with it, and I did not find fulfillment in it in any regard. I don't pretend to say that that's the way it should be for everyone, but that's the way it was for me. So I parked this aspect of my life over here to the side. I didn't understand it at this point in time, and I just parked it because I needed to get on with other things. While I had that, I needed to focus on my career. I had this white, hot, burning desire to realize fame, to prove to my father and everyone that I knew that I was a winner. I wasn't someone that they would be disappointed in. I wanted to be the best. I wanted to obtain power, money, and respect. And in 1983, you want to switch me up?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
In 1983, at the age of 25, after having grown up in the home building business, I started the Estridge Group, which was different than my father's company, which was a custom scattered lot builder. I had a passion to build whole neighborhoods. So at the age of 25, we started the Estridge Group in a neighborhood called Copperfield. And over the course of the next 2 years, we realized $1 million worth of profits. And I went out and bought brand new BMW and bought a condo and lake home and a new boat and Rolex, and I had everything I wanted. I obtained all the things that I knew was going to make me happy, but it didn't. I was never more miserable. All the things I thought that would bring me happiness, friends, joy, had failed. And then I experienced an emotional breakdown in February of 1985, while getting ready to go out on the town and club around in my BMW and my Rolex and my, back then we wore suits when we went out and clubbed. It was the mid-80s. I realized this was just another one of those nights that was going to end up empty. And I literally had an emotional breakdown. And I realized that everything that I had set up before myself as being what would bring me great joy and happiness had failed. And so there in my bed, crying miserably, literally out of control, hardly able to breathe. I didn't know what to do, but I had a Bible, and I don't even know why I had a Bible, because I'd never gone to church. We were not a Christian family. But I grabbed it, and I just opened it up, and there was Psalms 25. I don't know why. I just read Psalms 25 over and over and over and over again, crying miserably. And over the course of the next couple hours, I just had cried myself into calmness and a peace. And over the course of the next couple weeks, I made a commitment to quit drinking and drugging and smoking cigarettes, and a commitment to start reading the daily Bible, the one-year Bible, and going to church and making new friends and running and exercise. Lost 40 pounds. In the course of the next year and a half, I met my wife now of 28 years. And we have three children, 27, 25, and 20, and it's just been incredible. I wish everybody could meet my wife, you would understand. Between 1983 and 2000, I had purchased my father's company, started First Mile Technologies, which was a telephone, voice, video, and data company that served our neighborhoods, first of its kind in the country, the first triple play, which is now quite prevalent today. I built Indiana Downs Racetrack in Shelbyville, Indiana. I started a land development company. I started a third home building company. I built over 8,000 homes during that time period. Developed 30 plus neighborhoods. Made between 2000 and 2005, $25 million in our companies. Had assembled $80 million of real estate by 2008. Had been awarded the National Housing Quality Award from the National Association of Home Builders, which is equivalent to the Malcolm Baldrige Award. And voted three times one of the top 10 businesses to work for in the state of Indiana. Then we sold Indiana Downs for $49 million profit. In 2007, at the very best, I had $22 million in the bank, no debt, a home on the Gulf Coast, a couple of aircraft, and a net worth of over $50 million, and had started the Family Foundation, the largest family foundation in Hamilton County at that time of over $9 million. In 2008, the earth opened up. The stock market crashed, real estate crashed, the $80 million of land that I had, the bank said, was now worth $40 million. We went from building 400 homes a year to 120 homes a year. And the debt service on our land was $400,000 a month. And then a good friend of mine who owned a community bank, who was under a letter by the feds, who had loaned us $3 million on one of our pieces of land, who had a second position behind another bank, was under great scrutiny for having a second position behind another bank. And since the land was devalued, they were out of the money, so to speak. And so he said, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to sue you. There's nothing I can do. I've got to do it for the bank and our stockholders. And so he did. And we were cross-collateralized between our banks and our home building company. And when he did that, our home building bank, the bank that lent us money to build homes, ceased from lending us any more money on all the homes we had under construction at that time for 2 months, creating great disruption with our customers, with our vendors who couldn't get paid, and with the realtor market precipitating serious, serious concerns and troubles, all brought on because of a bank. And then I was in this period of time of, what do I do? What does one do with this situation? Well, I went all in. I'm an all-in kind of guy. I live all in. And I never felt that the funds that I just got done talking about that we had made or accumulated or was in the bank was ever really mine because of my faith. And in fact, I had developed the opinion that God had prepared us for this time to be able to endure this with those resources. And I felt that this just was the test of our faith. And this was an opportunity as a member in my community to demonstrate what does a Christian man do when faced with adversity, having been blessed. And so I put $10 million into the company immediately, followed by another $12 million. And then we mortgaged everything we could in order to supply the company with the necessary funds to meet our obligations, to meet all of our obligations to all the people that we had money to. We were constantly resizing the company. 20, 25, 30-year employees, worst experience of it all was meeting with them in my office, having to say goodbye. The people who had given their lives to our company, built their careers with our company, I had to say goodbye. Downsizing in order to save the company and stay alive. It was pure survival at that time. In the end, our bank, MI Bank, was acquired by BMO Bank. And when BMO Bank, I've since learned all this. I didn't know it in real time at the time. But BMO Bank, when they acquired MI Bank, evidently MI Bank had a horrible real estate portfolio. And they decided to get rid of all of MI's residential home building loans and clients and so forth. So we were, unbeknownst to us, for the last year and a half being worked out of the bank to the point in which we were refused a new construction line. Even though we had 120 homes in our last year of business and 40 homes under construction at that time. And I had new investors that were willing to come alongside and capitalize the company. But I told them no. I said, now's not the time. It's time to shutter the company. I have to face the truth. It is the way it is, and so we shuttered the company after 44 years. I was certain that this would become very public. This is the kind of thing that the news and the press likes to report on in Indianapolis. And there was no question I was going to face personal bankruptcy. And I talked to, there's an old saying that says, don't let a good tragedy go to waste. And I don't remember who said that. I think it was a chief of staff for one of the presidents. And so honestly, I really thought, you know, how can you take something like this, tumultuous situation, and figure out how to make something good out of it? And the questions I was asking myself was, how can I use this for God in some way, shape, or form? I think God is wanting me to use this in some fashion, and I searched hard for that. And another question that was heavy on my heart is, how does a Christian man really deal with bad things that happen that are inevitably bad in all of our lives? And then one of the most important things was my children at that time, my son, let's see, this would have been 8 years ago. He was 12. And so he's watching this. He's watching his dad deal with this. And my daughters, who are a little bit older, you know, I'm modeling for them. And I'm modeling for their friends. And I'm modeling for other people in the community who are my age. How do you deal with adversity? How do you deal with tough times? Because everyone's going to deal with tough times. So I thought, okay, this is an opportunity to really buck up and try to be a model for this. I have a vision and a purpose. How am I doing on time? No, really, how am I doing? How much time do I have? 10 minutes, okay. I'm good. I'll get it done. Viktor Frankl, who wrote a book, Man's Search for Meaning, to paraphrase very quickly, concludes in his book that those people who were able to survive the concentration camps and endure the difficult times were people that had identified that their life had a purpose that no man or circumstances and events in life could extinguish. And so I read that book maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and I wrote a purpose, I wrote a vision for myself, which reads as this: to serve and enrich the lives of my family, friends, and everyone I touch, to continue to grow in knowledge and capacity and faith, and to live according to biblical principles. And I literally say this, not daily, but many times a week, or read it, and it has guided me through those circumstances and those events, and many times throughout my life, and it calibrates me. It calibrates how I think, how I react, how I process, and how I move forward. So in dealing with these circumstances back at the time that we were going to shutter the company, I talked to a lot of friends, a lot of people who, big company owners and stuff like that I knew, and they said, well, you know, first thing you got to do is hire a PR firm and get this on the back page. I mean, because you want this will kill you. And that seemed like good advice at the time. That seemed like good advice at the time. But then I started thinking about my purpose and my vision and those other questions I just read off, and I decided, you know. So when I hired the PR firm, and I did hire a PR firm, they came in prepared to really smash this thing and meet with their friends in the press and so on and so forth. I said, I want this front page of the Star. And after all, I'd never been on the front page of the Star. So why not take advantage of this opportunity? They said, well, we're not used to doing that in these kinds of circumstances. And I said, well, that's what I'd like for you to do. And they did. They got on the front page of the Star. And I told the truth. I told the story. That was just the beginning. Through the next few years, I experienced personal bankruptcy. We lost our home. We lost all of our material possessions. My mother died in 2012. I got fired from my interim job in 2012. My father died in 2013. I survived an abdominal aneurysm, two accidents that broke my shoulders, and I, over that time period, became an alcoholic. And if that wasn't enough, one day when I was shaving with a straight-edge blazer, I dropped it and sliced off one of my nipples. I'm kidding. I'm grateful to say I have both my nipples. That's some things I've been able to keep. Yeah. But I've been knocked down over and over again and never knocked out, though. And so quickly to wrap up, how do you survive tough times? How have I been able to survive this? First and foremost, you have to surrender to God. You have to surrender to God. Pride kills during these kinds of circumstances. And I completely and totally, like that time when I was 26 years old, back in my bedroom, I surrendered to God and I said, I absolutely cannot, do not know how to deal with this. Please take over my life. Give me guidance, insight, wisdom. And he did. Secondly, go deep with God and trust his pruning. Last quick story, my son, when he was very little, my wife raises rose bushes, and he loves to this day to work with her in the garden. And as any of you know, you prune rose bushes and you cut the dead back. And he asked her one day, I was out there, I was listening, I was smoking a cigar, and I was listening. And he said, Mommy, why are you cutting the rose bush? Won't that hurt it? And she says, No, it doesn't hurt it. And he goes, Does it hurt the bush? And she goes, no, when you cut the dead back, new growth comes back. In John 15, 1 through 8, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. So I look at this time period and all the events and circumstances that I've experienced and those that I inevitably will as simply prunings, providing that I remain in the vine. Keep your head up and keep driving. And never quit. I was a guard. I was an offensive guard. And I was blessed to be an offensive guard because, as any of you that were offensive linemen, drive, 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 drive. Keep your head up and just keep driving. And I think that's just a great fundamental thing to remember. And lastly, Romans 12:2, which is my lifetime verse. Conform no longer to the patterns of this world, but forever renew your mind. I think that there are a lot of currents and patterns in this world today that we can get caught up in. But if there's any way to survive, It's to not get caught up in them and to renew our minds and not go with the flow and not listen to the friends that want to bury your story on the back page, and to do the opposite and go to the front page and tell the truth, be honest about your past, share your story. At 59 years of age, maybe someone somewhere in this room or another room someday that I get to speak to has experienced something or knows someone that's experiencing something that my experiences can help them through the times that they're going through, because we're all experiencing life together. So thank you very much for this opportunity today. I look forward to sharing some more time with you as we finish out the hour.